Confusion matrix.
Right, we're rolling.
Morning,
Pete. How's things?
All good in the world, I would say, roughly.
Yes, roughly. Roughly is probably the right word. You'll notice that I'm standing today. This is my new stance for doing podcasting, because what I've noticed is that I when I'm sitting down at my desk, I jiggle my leg.
Yes.
And I've had to remove it, the jiggling sound, because it jiggles the microphone, because I can't afford to have one of those lovely boom mics, which I'll probably get at some point. So I've had to sort of edit out the leg jiggling sounds, and what I found is if I stand up, I can, you know, bounce around. So yeah, that's me. I'm stood up, so this is going to be fun, and hopefully I won't get too tired. Wait. Welcome back, Pete. I'll start this off by saying this is our second attempt to record this episode. The first attempt was dramatically aborted when I was talking about the fact that I'm standing up to record my podcast episodes now because of my leg jiggling problem interfering with the sound. And then Pete decided that was a good idea, stood up and unplugged his PC.
Yes.
And then disappeared, which was all the fun.
Yeah. So that's a very unceremonious, anyone that knows when you've been running your computer for like, you know, months at a time. And the reason why you don't reboot it is because you've got so much open and you don't want to close it all down, and then it just happens. And so, yeah, that's all going to be painful when I come to restart everything later on.
Well, here's an interesting point to start off with, really, is that I have to reboot my MacBook every few days because I was stupid enough to buy one with only 8 gig of RAM, which might be all right if what you want to do is browse the internet and look at the odd Excel file. But for our job, 8 gigs. Either for the data science side of my job or the video editing side, video and sound editing side of my job, it's not enough. So I have to reboot all the time. At some point I will upgrade. But the upgrade path for memory on MacBooks is like £200 for, you know, what in reality is probably about 10 quid's worth of actual memory.
Yeah.
And you can't update the M1s. You have to upgrade the whole thing. So there you go. The wonders of Mac. I'm still not going back to Windows because Windows is horrible, but I am considering moving on to a Linux laptop for my job. I guess we'll have to see when I've got a bit more money.
Yes, indeed.
Anyway, right. What are we going to talk about today? I got something. I can go first.
Yeah.
I just want to make a comment on the use of averages to measure or monitor, track frequencies of things. So average sales per year or per month per customer, for example, or average trips on an airline, or average attendances to a venue or something like that.
Yeah.
And the propensity for businesses to use an average, and just how almost completely useless that is unless you've got a very homogenous business. And these metrics are used to, among other things, as a top level KPI. It's like the most vanilla loyalty measure, and it's almost entirely useless in my opinion, because you might target going from, you know, an average frequency of three to going to four. And it could, unless your customer base is incredibly homogeneous, i.e., most people are already lurking around two to five, or probably less, then that average is going to be hiding a mountain of variance. And where do you make the changes, right? By pushing up your ultra loyal users a few more instances, or by trying to shift your transient customer base, turning the proverbial tank around. And how are you going to do that? How do you prioritize? Well, the whole point of an average, particularly the mean, is that it obfuscates the variance. And in some circumstances, that's exactly what you want. But in terms of measuring frequency of things, it's almost entirely pointless. Do you have an opinion on this?
I mean, well, you mentioned the variance and outliers, and we know. I mean, one of the first things we'll do, given any set of data, is run a couple of numbers on it. And one is get the average, as in the mean that everybody knows, and the other is, we just have tools that spit out the median. And funny enough, I did this yesterday. I just got some figures, nothing that I was majorly concerned about, but I just first thing I do is go and look at the difference between those two. And then that's going to tell me whether I see a skew in the data. So if I've got lots of values at around 100, and so the average comes in at 98, and then I've got a value at 10,000, then that average, even if it's just one value, suddenly becomes, I don't know, like 110 or 120, 135, I don't know, something much larger. And that's because you've got this ridiculously large outlier. Well, actually, your average is 98 or 99, and that's where your median will be. But because you've got this one large outlier, it pulls everything up. And that's a slightly extreme example, but more what you get in businesses is you'll get, it's the whole 80-20 rule that everyone knows about. If you're thinking about something like sales or revenue, 80% of your sales is probably caused by 20% of your top paying customers. And if the difference between those is quite large and you take an average, then that's not telling you the two stories you've got, that you've got a small percentage of your customers that are willing to pay a lot of money for maybe a lot of services or whatever, or a lot of product. And then you've got your general customers who don't pay that much, but there's a lot of them. And we found before working with businesses is you might want to treat those two segments differently. And if you take an average, well, you're somewhere in the middle and you're not serving either.
Well, yeah, and I talk about this in terms of frequencies, but one of our previous employers, used averages for things like revenue per customer engagement, like per project, and that would vary between like 2 grand and 2 million, right? And it's an exponential scale, yet still we would dig up averages everywhere. Well, what the hell does it mean? And so, as you point out, the difference between the mean and the median is more interesting than the mean itself, unless they happen to be the same, right? At which point, fine, use your average, right? Even then, that's risky. Risky, 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 because you might still be hiding a mountain of variance, depending on how your data is structured. But like the fact that people don't even question to look underneath that a lot of the time, and or think about other perhaps more valuable metrics, always sort of baffles me a bit, because. I feel like people think that the mean is a really intuitive measure, right? It's our generalization, centralization measure. And if you start wafting terms like standard deviation and variance at people, they'll look at you blankly or start crying or something. And so, but that's not, there's not they're not difficult concepts.
No.
I just don't think they're explained to a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
On the business side, and they're really vital tools. And it really does sort of surprise me that there's not more education systematically on this. And you know, people talk about making their business data driven or insights driven or information driven. And if you can't get past the first barrier is why a mean is not good for certain situations, then you're going nowhere with that initiative. And the your analysts in your business are always going to look superhuman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I agree. And as we well know, I don't know what the percentage of the population is that's, shall we say, not as good with numbers. And I think that can create a real fear. And I think as you get into the adult, so one, I think quite a lot of people get scared at school. Like you start looking at this stuff, and if you're not maths orientated, then that stuff soon becomes, some other language. You sort of pop your head around the classroom door, and everyone's got numbers and letters and equal signs and graphs, and you're like, man, I lost track of this. And you start getting into advanced calculus, and any sane person's going, what are you talking about? And so I think that drives a real barrier. And then I think that a lot of people enter the adult world, a bit sort of, yeah, well, and I think it's also easy where you get classified as, good at maths or not good, and people go, oh, well, I'm sort of okay. And then you probably spend 5 or 10 years, or you can do, we don't come near that stuff, depending on the role you do, or you can avoid it. And so I think then when it does start to become more important, I think the sort of going back and thinking, God, what was it I learned 15 years ago, and applying that to, oh, I'm in a supermarket and we sell food, and I know I'm selling 200 of these things, and that sort of stuff, is sort of obvious. But to then start going, like you say, go back and think about standard deviation, averages, and medians, and how does that apply to the oranges that I'm trying to sell this week? The two are just quite distant, and it does, you have to sit down and take a little bit of time to go, okay, well, this is what I learned. How does that apply here? Why might that be useful? It's just not anything most people are doing. Certainly in a work context, your colleague next to you isn't saying, oh, usually they're not saying, let's just spend, 20 minutes understanding this concept because it's really important for the next 2 years of your work. Do you know what I mean?
So I agree. I think that the word average is wafted around quite liberally by anyone, regardless of whether they have any connection with the numerical world at all. As in, the average man on the street thinks Donald Trump is an idiot, right? Well, hold on. Yeah, sure. Right. It's a figure of speech, right? No one's going to go, where is the statistical analysis that supports your assertion, mister? You know what I mean? Like, can you back that up with some numbers from the ONS? No, it's a figure of speech, right? And in this country, it might well be true. And I think that you either believe that or you don't. It's a statement of belief, right? And so, people don't sort of think about the fact, well, there's an actual real metric that underpins that, if it's being measured. The oranges and apple thing is a good example in the sense that there's a lady just that we actually have a greengrocer in my village. They're quite unusual these days, but this old lady who's obsessed with Elvis, and she's got a picture of Elvis in the greengrocer window. She and they all spills out on the street, and there's lots of oranges and melons and stuff when you go past. She don't, incidentally, don't ever use her because she doesn't take cards, right? I don't have cash. I mean, I just don't carry it, so I have to go to the supermarket instead. Anyway, she will be quite numerate, right? She runs that business on her own. She will know roughly how many apples, oranges, melons, and kumquats she sells of a day or a week. And if you say to her, well, your average sales of passion fruits in the last month was 20 a week, and she knows actually that she had a week where someone had a big dinner party with a bunch of passion fruit starters. or salad with a passion fruit dressing, that she will say, "Oh, actually, that's a bit nonsense. I usually only sell about two or three a week. It was just I had that one week, right?" And she'll understand that. And then you go, "Okay, so your variance is quite high from a week-to-week basis." And she'll look at you going, "Was that even English, right?" But actually, she knows the variance is high. That's what you've just told me. You've just told me that at least in this time period, the variance is high. And I could then repeat what she said back to her and say, "Well, that's variance." And she'd probably still look at me saying, "Well, why do I need a new word, right?" But then you get into the sort of and she's a business person, but we're talking about the business world of, what people sitting in offices in front of computers who happily use spreadsheets and will use which has some really advanced statistical functions, who are still terrified of variance and probably less aware of it than in some circumstances than the lady with the apples and oranges and passion fruits. And I think that if I was a CEO, I'd probably want to roll out training to all of my staff that touch anything even vaguely numerate, but probably all of them anyway, and get them basics, the basics of descriptive statistics, because it gets a bit 1984, because you can't talk about something if you have no language for it. And I think it does get really hard to talk to business when you start to say, "Well, but your variance is high on this metric," and they're looking at you going, "I don't know what that means." Well, now I have to explain to you what that means, right? And now that's slowed everything down. And if that doesn't embed in their mind, then you've got a problem, because you're going to struggle to talk about this very obvious and clear description of reality every time you talk to them. And I think it's just a generic frustration that people in our trade have.
No, definitely. And like you say, when you talk about average and frequencies, I mean that's particularly fraught. How often does somebody do something? Because time varies, how people view times varies by types of business. I remember working in the supermarket years ago, and obviously, you're looking at a lot of repeat customers. So, you're talking about your weekly shop, your monthly shop. You are talking about people coming back perhaps daily. Like you say, the days of the greengrocers, people were shopping 5, 6 days a week down the high street, because you've got small shops, no such things as these large supermarkets. Monthly shop, what's that all about? Let alone being able to afford it. Bit like now, actually. And so when they did the segmentation, what was really interesting, I remember, was, and then they announced these customer personas across the company, to much eye rolling for most of us. Oh, here we go, marketers are off. But interesting point was, they said, "Oh yeah, we're after the average family, which is, two adults, two children, who goes shopping once a week." And it's really interesting that they put that frequency into the actual segmentation of their customers. And they had other customers which were, large family once a month. And the reason why they're different is because they're doing different things. They've got different behaviors. If you go to them with a single message, like I said earlier, you're not going to hit either of them very well. So they put frequency into an actual segmentation. Then there's no average here. You're either over here or you're over on this side. If you're average, we're going to call you something else. And what does that even mean? Because if you go in every week for a month, and then you go on holiday and you go in once the following month, well, what's your average? Well, five times over two, it doesn't really make any sense. So I think it's like you say, it's an easy trap to fall into, but actually separating that out is a great, really easy view onto how your customers behave.
Well, of course. So you've just spilled over into customer segmentation, which, when we started talking about loyalty, and quickly realized that this is a problem for any number of numeric business interaction. But I mean, segmentation's for another day, because I think we can go wild with that. And don't even get me started on demographics. And the other thing I think is seasonality. You know, the bane of every retail analyst's existence is the very existence of Christmas, right? I say retail, I mean most businesses. If you've got a bloody day, a week in the middle of, you know, every financial year where all bets are off, right? You know what I mean? It's like, it's just crazy that you have to deal with this outlier all the time. And I honestly think that your average analyst, if you ask them, said, if we, would you be happier or sadder if we abolished Christmas entirely from, you know, the planet, most analysts would go, oh God, yeah, that would make my life so much easier. While we're at it, can you make all the lengths equal, all the months equal lengths, please?
Yeah, and exactly.
A few other things that are definitely not going to happen. So good. Right. Well, I think we could definitely talk about this for a while, but let's move on. Have you got something for us?
Yes. So, you know, we've had the odd chat about AI. And so I was actually...
Really? I don't remember.
Yeah. So I was actually chatting with an AI, which is one of those weird new things in the world. I was asking about... my actual question was, what science fiction is being missed, it hasn't been written about, of which the technology might be in its infant stage at the moment. And then I gave it an example of the mobile phone. No one was really writing about mobile phones in 80s and 90s fiction.
Star Trek.
Yeah, well, you know, well, it depends which ones, I suppose. The original, I suppose. But that was only to phone your ship, though. So, you know.
Well, what else do you use a phone for?
You know,
phone with my wife, which is basically the same thing.
Yeah. So there was a whole sort of, you know, and then, you know, with what mobile phones have turned into, which is actually a mobile computer that has the ability to phone. Not that anyone wants to do that anymore. And it sort of got missed, really, which I always find sort of quite amusing. And so I asked the AI, and so it came up with four things. So the one that jumped out immediately, just because some of the things we've been doing recently, was DAOs, which you might know or not know about. And I'm like, okay, I've seen this before, and it was quite good. It sort of wrote a paragraph on it, and this is decentralized autonomous organizations. And you're going, right, well, I'm glad there's a three-letter acronym for that one. And just to give a basic definition, is it's an organization which has no it doesn't have a hierarchical structure, and it's born out of a smart contract, and that is held on the blockchain. And so you're into the whole sort of web 3.0, I believe, and the blockchain. And the idea being that rather than, you know, a CEO and a hierarchical, you know, board, is that everyone, you know, gets to vote on things that happen. And because you're intrinsically, well, in my head anyway, it's intrinsically linked to technology and smart contracts. It's set up so a whole bunch of things can sort of happen kind of automatically without anyone actually doing anything. But one of those things might be there's a decision to be made, you know, ping everybody in the organization to get their opinion. But I also liken it to, you know, you might earn some revenue and 10% goes to a charity, and that just happens without anyone intervening. You know, you don't have anyone in finance doing that for you. It's just automated. And and so it was talking about how that's obviously quite a big change to the organizations, you know, which we've organically grown over the last few hundred years, and how they've become entities and legal entities. And it was one of those things where you have to think about it, and it all seems quite good, but it's like really on the peripheral of my understanding. You're trying to imagine an organization running with no censor and everybody having an equal vote, and it sounds slightly utopian, to be honest. And you're sort of thinking that there could still be, if you don't set up that smart contract at the beginning, this thing is going to crash and burn in no time at all. But you must have read about these things. What were your thoughts?
Yes, I have. They so you say utopian, which is usually sort of applied to very sort of liberal-minded futures, whereas of course blockchain is and crypto in general is libertarian to the max. And so I don't want to find out what a world looks like where most organizations are run by voting tech bros. But I have seen DAOs being used in the context of art collectives, for example, like community-minded organizations to sort of fund and direct public art installations and things like that. There's a good podcast if you want to hear the flip side to the rampant libertarian uber capitalist crypto and blockchain view. It's called the Blockchain Socialist, and he's quite an interesting guy, but like it gets really, really wildly academic, especially on the sort of economic side. But there's some interesting stuff on there. But I guess you look at a DAO in terms of if you had a group of people that had a set of like a portfolio of shares, right? Like you would for a fund for a pension, and that you could rather than have a single pension, but rather a single fund manager, people could just vote because obviously Tesla's tanking is going to tank forever, unless they start making tanks, maybe.
Electric tanks.
Electric tanks, car, I can't wait to see those. Maybe they'll shoot out bolts of electricity instead of bombs.
Exactly.
See, there we go. That one has been imagined by someone, I can imagine.
Must
Go and look at Starship Troopers or something.
have
So we're going to sell the Tesla shares because Elon Musk, and we can all vote, right, as to whether we do that or not, or how many to sell. What's interesting here is, well, the politics of it aside, it should be more useful to more left-leaning anarchist types as a way to create the conditions for either a virtual or an actual commune. This is the old, what do they call themselves? The anarcho-syndicalists, right? Which is where you basically get, it's the left-wing version of libertarianism, where you get the get rid of the governments and then have self managing communities, right? And because this can now happen because of the existence of cryptocurrency, whereby you can have your own currency and it can just be interchangeable, right? Or you can just standardize on Bitcoin or Ether or something, right? So there's a lot of potentially interesting stuff. And I guess from our perspective, well, that's all data, isn't it? Right? How many times have we worked for a business where the CEO or CMO or someone's gone, yeah, right, we're now gonna change our website so it's all green, right? And you're going, why are you doing that? And he's like, well, I know, right? I know it will be better. And you're like, where's the data? And they go, I don't need data. I'm the king of this company. I can do what I want. And so what? Maybe he's right. Maybe he's wrong. There's no way of knowing until you've done it. And why did he decide to do that? Well, you've got no data, right? Really, you're just trying to sort of investigate the psychology of a human being. Whereas if it was the syndicate that owns the company, voted on it, and that data was made available, then you know exactly why it's happened. So it's a bit more like looking at what the Fed or the Bank of England votes on interest rates, where you get a window inside exactly why they did it, right? Which is a good example of how these things might work. And I think that would be awesome.
Blockchain was all the rage, 5 years ago. And I think there's still a lot of work going on, but it's fallen out of the zeitgeist. I mean, I think partly because for for us mere mortals, it's kind of sometimes a bit weird to get your head around this idea of smart contracts, which execute themselves, and then it's all on the, each decision is on the blockchain and it's transparent. I think it leaves people going, what? But I think there's still a lot of work going on. So I do think this is one of those things which is going to come up in the future because there's actually quite a lot going on. It's just that most of us don't really kind of, don't get it. Most people in life are going, well, what's the outcome of this? But what one of the things that did strike me with some of the stuff we've been doing recently, which pulls it a little bit back towards the Death Star of AI, but it talked about the whole idea, of voting, so anything that happens, you get notified and then you sort of tap a vote. And I thought, well, we already know voter apathy, right? In real life. Imagine if you're getting pinged 35 times a day for what your company should be doing. Oh, God's sake, give me a break. So the answer to that's going to be, let's get an AI to deal with that. So then you're into, okay, well, I have my agent, my AI agent, which will now be talking with the central thing. And then you're kind of into, what we've been talking about before, which is kind of like your focus group. So now conceivably you could have a company set up with a bunch of agents which are just working on, on top of a large language model with a specific point of view, and then they'll vote a say a certain way, and through, I don't know what you would call that, through the democracy of a bunch of agents with different points of view, find a way forward. And again, they're never going to miss a decision because that's their job, right? They're just sitting there waiting for the next option to come in. And so again, you think about how quick that might, you could form a company. It might go through 35 years worth of evolution in a day or in 2 hours. Do you know what I mean? It might, so that just really left me, again, on the edge of my imagination, thinking, well, how's that going to work? That feels like we're going to get creamed by some Uber company. Although I'm not sure.
Well, of course. Right. I mean, like, indeed, why do we need humans at all? Just get rid of them, right? So, a couple of things there. Firstly, do you want to make 14 decisions a day about your business? Well, yes, right. This is like the gamification of businesses. I think it could go through the roof. Pete, do you realize people play the game like
Oh,
Sims
yeah.
and various other simulation games constantly? Like the especially these idle games. I got completely sucked into the world of idle games where you basically just have to check in a few times a day and do some stuff, right?
Right.
Sell some stuff, buy some stuff, and it just keeps chucking. It doesn't actually keep chucking away in the background. It actually just recalculates itself when you log back in, but it's effectively the same thing. It's like a Tamagotchi, right? And of course we had Tamagotchis and people have pets, right? So I think people will be well up for making that many decisions, especially if it means we don't have to have AIs doing it for us, because that's fucking terrifying,
No,
right?
yeah, exactly.
And so how, and this comes down to the very fact is that in that scenario, in whatever form it takes. Well, okay, right. So I'm again, my favorite trick of contradicting myself in real time, right, is I was going to say, how do you build in a sense of ethics so that, those AIs don't come together, build an Uber country company and destroy the human race, right? But then you think about how the stock market works, and I bought some shares in some business. It's making me money. I can actually, in some senses, vote on that either directly because my shares allow for that, or via like voting with my feet and selling out or whatever, and moving to a competitor, moving my money to a competitor. And one of the key features about the, especially the poorly regulated world stock market we have right now, is that ethics don't come into it. Right, I'm just, are you making me money? Yes, no, I don't care. Right, and a lot of the time people will be like, well, I've got shares in, they are treating people in Asia very badly, but they're making me money, so therefore I keep my shares. And it's not me that's doing it directly. It's the CEO's fault or whatever, right? You know, and people, by distancing themselves from the ethics of the shares that they invest in, not entirely. Some people will, you know, deliberately invest ethically. But like most people, you know, ethics doesn't come into it. That's somebody else's problem. That's the government and the regulator's problem, which, of course, you know, they have very little power over this anymore because it's all offshored, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, the stock market in itself isn't very ethical. If you ever listen to any either finance or markets or crypto-based podcasts, it always strikes me just how the concept of humans and ethics simply is not part of the conversation. It just doesn't exist, yeah. Right? They might mention the fact that shares took a hit because it turned out they were doing bad things to some people. Well, actually, I think that is a thing that happened, but there are other shoe manufacturers that might also be doing nasty things to other people. It's purely theoretical. I absolutely don't know. Mm. Some company has done some bad things. It taken a hit on their shares, and it will just be, well, that's it, right? Mm. There's no debating whether or not you should hold those shares. I'm just calling out the fact that the share price went down, right?
Yeah.
So bollocks to it. We're all going to get eaten by AI.
Yeah. Well,
is what you're saying.
Or not. I mean, it was interesting. So, you know, well, we'll have to watch this space. Could be some scary stuff coming. Who knows?
Well, it is. And I'm going to have to beep out all those references to I think, because I don't want their publicity AI, you know, yes, tracking us down and suing us for defamation or whatever that is.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, that's really cheerful. That's really cheered me up. So we should have more of these conversations about the way that technology is going to kill us. or we should start our own anarcho-syndicalist Web 3.0 commune in the darkest reaches of the Outer Hebrides. We can purchase a an old oil rig.
Yeah.
And then have a massive server farm on there. And then set our own laws and, you know, go for it, go crazy.
Yeah.
We'll call it the Confusionia or something.
And then we're as a baddie in a Bond film if we're lucky.
Well, there you go, right? I've always felt like I'd make a good Bond baddie. Right. I think on that cheerful and world conquering note, we should call it a day.
Yes. See you next time.
Yeah, bye.
The Confusion Matrix.